If I were creating a world, I wouldn't mess about with butterflies and daffodils. I would have started with lasers. 8 o'clock, day one.
Catapult of propaganda. The truth is out there.
An alien race to come down and threaten us. The military's industrial complex. This were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker.
It is Friday, May the 19th of 2006.
Friday, and sometimes you fry on Friday. I had fried burgers for lunch. But also upstairs, if you go up there, it's about 15 degrees warmer up there. And
yes.
The dogs say, no, we don't want to fry up there. We'll lie down in the
That's
bunker
right.
where it's nice and cool.
Lie day, actually.
It's so. A lie day. Well,
all the concrete down here keeps it nice and comfortable, and that's why we spend all of our time down here. It has nothing to do with the white unmarked panel truck sitting outside.
Trying to see through the walls. You know, our bunker is in our basement, and we have, you know, one of those nice basements where you have practically no view to the outside except for the walkout mm-hmm. slider door.
Yep. Every angle here, because of the one entryway, is a gunfighter's seat, so...
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Nobody sneaking up on us down here. Let me tell
anybody.
You.
Not with the dogs, no.
Yes. So we've got some good stuff coming up. The second and final part of our two-part interview with Beth Vey as she discusses The Secrets of Sumer, which is the title of her website, generated a lot of comments at the PID forum.
You know what? She has such a unique perspective on things. And you know what? She may be onto something.
Mm-hmm. Yep, talking about Stargates. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about Stargates here in just a bit.
Yeah, we are going to talk about that later. Right now, I have a rant.
Oh, okay.
I've been working up a good rant all day. I haven't had one in so long. I don't rant the way you do, though.
Well,
it's a kinder, gentler rant.
That's true. That's true. But
no, actually, there was a story posted to Watcher this morning about a new uniform dress law in Iran, and it came out of... a newspaper out of Canada. And since that publication early this morning, it's been all over the mainstream media. It's been bandied about all over the internet. Mm-hmm. Rush Limbaugh has weighed in. Yeah, I mean, it's all over blogs. There are many stories that have come out to to debunk it, so to speak. The fact is, there is truth in the original story. The interpretation may be a little more extreme and a little more to the psyops angle, but I posted late this evening on Watcher Magazine a story that was actually originally published on May the 15th,
mm-hmm.
and its original source comes from an Iranian news service.
Right.
This is
what the Iranian government wants you to hear.
Exactly. This is a real story. This is a real law that Ahmadinejad wants to be enacted. It just has to be approved by the Legislative Council. Read Mullah's here.
Mm-hmm.
So if he gets the approval of the real leaders of the country, then it will go through. And more than likely it will, because essentially what it says is no longer dress Western.
Mm-hmm.
Now you dress in a Muslim-appropriate fashion. He wants the Muslims to dress in a much more uniform manner, the women to be much more covered up.
Mm-hmm.
And non-Muslims are, according to everything I've read, going to be color-coded in a way. And the reason for this is, at the very least, to distinguish them from Muslims. And I know that this sounds like a very stringent, evil, and frankly, in many ways, maybe it is, but it goes back to the idea that a Muslim cannot shake hands.
With
a
non-Muslim. Okay.
And you need to know before you shake hands with that person. You and I were talking about this at lunchtime today. My sister Faye used to work for some Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Great people.
Mm-hmm.
They were great, but they had, you know, they have very stringent laws. And one of them is they cannot shake hands with the left hand. Faye's left-handed.
Yeah.
And she had to constantly, you know, she reaches out with her left hand all the time. She eats with her left hand. You can't do that in front of them.
No, you can't.
It grosses them out. And if you don't know the reason for that, write us an email. We'll let you know.
We'll explain it. Yeah, we're not going to talk about it here. But, well, that is interesting because, again, it had been put out in the mainstream press as this horrible thing, shades of Hitler and making the Jews wear little stars.
Well, I think that's taking a legitimate news story and spinning it mm-hmm. in a way that is I think it's psyops.
Well,
which is one of the reasons I posted it to Watcher.
Right.
I wanted to see what happened with it, and of course I followed up on it. I thank everybody who sent email because, mm-hmm. A, it shows that you read it, and B, it shows that you're good Bereans. You take a story and you think, wait a minute, let me just check this out.
Yeah.
And, but you know what? That says a lot for the level of intellect mm-hmm. and concern in our readership.
Absolutely. And our listeners. And it's really shows in the comments that we get both through email and at the PID forum. Mm-hmm. Ahmadinejad is clearly one of the Hitlers of the month, according to the neocon spin in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
The other, of course, is Hugo Chavez, who's been accused of being an anti-Semite. And interestingly enough, some very prominent Jews came to Chavez's defense and said this is not true.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to push a hot button that everybody can immediately relate to, you point to somebody and say, mm-hmm. he's Hitler.
It's the and ultimate epithet.
It is the ultimate epithet. So Ahmadinejad, Hitler. Of course, if you're a liberal, especially if you're a Democrat, Bush, Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. It's universal. Mm-hmm. And it tells you the way they're trying to push us into thinking. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not saying that Ahmadinejad is a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has some very apocalyptic views of the coming conflict between Islam and everyone else.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think it would be below him at all to decide to use yellow to denote people who are Jewish.
Right. So we're not trying to minimize the story, but we're just trying to, you know, get information out there before it's been filtered, or trying to put it out at least as unfiltered as we can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that goes through the mainstream media, whether you find it on the internet or not, is obviously going through some sort of editing process.
Mm-hmm.
We put our own editing process onto the stories that we put out there. Let's be honest. We have our own view of the world.
We choose the stories. I mean, you're looking at the stories that we think are important.
Right. And hopefully we are honest enough about what we believe that you can decide whether you trust our judgment or not. We're coming at this from a decidedly biblical, conservative, Christian viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But again, trying to be good Bereans and not take everything that comes from the so-called conservative party, political party in the United States as good. So anyway, that's the background on this particular story. And it is interesting, though, because it is one that is definitely stirring up a lot of reaction.
You know, what's really interesting is there's another story that's out that doesn't seem to have gotten much traction today, at least in the mainstream media. That's the United Nations
mm-hmm.
is telling Chicago police what they can and can't do.
I think that's really interesting because, as you pointed out in the note that you posted, the observation that you posted to this story, the United Nations really has a lot of gall in, first of all, telling the police force of Chicago how it can treat, you know, how it can treat people that mm-hmm. gets arrested. But secondly, that it can hold or attempt to hold the Chicago PD responsible for actions that took place before the 1984 United Nations Convention Against Torture.
Yes, can you believe that?
What they've done is the Committee Against Torture at the United Nations has said that an investigation into torture by the city of Chicago needs to go further. And this regards allegations that that suspects arrested by the Chicago Police Department in the 1970s and 80s involved torturing suspects.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, the 1984 Convention Against Torture post-dated these incidents that supposedly
yes.
took place. So first of all, the UN doesn't have any jurisdiction. Secondly, it's trying to hold the police department accountable for stuff that happened before this
exactly.
treaty took place.
I don't think the Chicago Police Department signed on to this.
I doubt
it
that
was
it did.
Our federal government that signed on to
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
The UN is just cheesed about this whole rendition thing. And so they are meeting right now as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
They are meeting over this kind of stuff. And another thing they've cracked down on is they are saying the United States must end secret detentions. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I do. But I think coming in and telling a local police department what they can and can't do, that sends chills down my spine.
Yeah. Since when is the United Nations dictating how the police forces in American cities do their jobs?
Uh-huh.
Especially when you consider that one of the planks, one of the points in the UN, what is it, the human rights, the UN Declaration of Human Rights, something like point 29 says that freedom of speech is a good thing as long as it doesn't, as long as you don't criticize the United Nations or its policies,
well,
something to that effect.
What I find interesting is that the United States seems to be losing jurisdiction on many, many things. It really has become a global government. And the UN is the ostensible head of that government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not they really are or not, you know, you and I have talked about the Illuminati and all of that. That's for debate. But the UN is coming in, and they don't like us. And I say, get them out of New York. Get them in some other country.
Yeah,
they don't
like
want them here anyway.
Babylon.
They'll end up there.
Yeah, it's a human. This is what I was trying to think of. It was the human rights, or the Declaration on Human Rights, Article 29. And basically, it says that everyone, in exercising their rights and freedoms, may in no case be exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations.
Hmm.
So I guess we're probably on their watch list.
Well, that explains those helicopters going over.
Incidentally, there's a great quote from Mayor Daley, the former Mayor Daley, Richard J. Daley, who's the father of Richard M. Daley, the current mayor of Chicago, who was asked about some of the tactics used by the Chicago police. And Mayor Daley said, the police aren't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder. Mayor Daley, and I grew up during Daley's long tenure as mayor of Chicago, had some real Yogi Berra moments, and that was a classic.
I was going to say, that's a classic
that is
Yogi
a classic.
Berra one.
Mm-hmm.
They give you cash, which is as good as money.
The another story that we had emailed to us a couple of times today involved the statement by the chairman of the board of the Verichip Corporation on network television this week that the United States should use RFID tags in order to preserve disorder along the border. He said that the way to make sure that guest workers, the president's guest worker mm-hmm. program, is maintained or is operated smoothly.
The guest worker bees.
Yeah, that come in across the border are tracked using RFID chips. Hmm? This
you
is
know,
exactly
you ever
what
look
you
at
were
a beehive?
Yeah.
No, seriously, there are bees at the entrance, and mm-hmm. they check. You'd better be part of our hive because we're going
right.
to check you out.
Mm-hmm.
You better know the dance.
That's right. If you don't do the right dance, if you don't have the right RFID chip, this is something that you talked about before, and it relates back to the comment by Hillary Clinton that the way to secure our borders is to use a virtual fence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This would provide the means to create the virtual fence. And that's exactly what you were saying. That
keep,
this is what,
keep track of this phrase. It's popping up more and more. Virtual fence.
Mm-hmm. And Verichip is the principal, is the primary company promoting this technology.
Well, we've all seen the little fences you can buy, bury underground. They go around your house. You put a collar on your dog, and
right.
supposedly it keeps the dog inside the yard. Trust mm-hmm. me, big dogs doesn't work,
that's
especially
right.
a Dalmatian. But it's that kind of technology. Little sensors that track who's going in and who's going out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Next thing, we'll have a force field up.
Well, that'll be cool, though, because that'll protect us from the giant alien Santa Claus from space.
Well, he's evil.
The Senate, in another poll-protecting move, voted that English should be the official language of the United States. 63-34 vote. This took place yesterday, Thursday, that is, and called English the common and unifying language. I thought this was an issue that had been settled back in, the 1780s.
When we decided against German.
Yeah. So why did they feel the need to do this again? Well, probably to, again, preserve their poll numbers in the face of an angry American public that's just a little bit cheesed at the porous, like Swiss cheese, border.
And then there's Harry Reid,
mm-hmm,
who says, no, I think it's directed basically to people who speak Spanish.
It's
duh.
Yeah. Well, Harry, the problem is that as much as people would like to claim that we are a nation of immigrants, that statement is inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
We are a nation of former immigrants.
Exactly.
We have been integrated into a culture, a society. My ancestors on my dad's side, some of them were here from the very beginning, as were yours. Some of them on dad's side came over about 150 years ago from Sweden, had to learn the language.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's side came over about 120 years ago from Russia of German extraction, had to learn the language. You know, I don't see the problem in requesting that people who want to come to the United mm-hmm. States and become part of the culture learn the common language and integrate. That's how we become the melting pot. You can't be in the pot and remain a lump. You know, you can't be integrated, you know? It's like we're the salsa. What is it when you melt the cheese for the chips and I'm not trying to use it. I just realized I'm using a Spanish
reference. That's what
here.
I'm laughing at.
And I'm not doing it intentionally. So forgive me for that. That was not intentional. But the idea is if we are a melting pot and the idea is that we are to create a society where we're all Americans, mm-hmm. you can't do that if you've got cultural barriers as basic as communication.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Harry Reid, you're ate up.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's like having, let's see, you've got a hydrogen atom, you've got an oxygen. Now, individually, they're hydrogen and oxygen.
Right.
But if you put two hydrogens and one oxygen together, you got water. It's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can no longer say, no, I insist on being called hydrogen. We're going to speak hydrogen. No, we're speaking water today.
Yeah. There was an interesting analysis that was released this week by the Cato Institute. We talked about them a little bit a couple of weeks ago. It's the libertarian group, but mm-hmm. you know, many of its sponsors are, you know, big corporations. However, interestingly enough, a couple of authors through the Cato Institute, Gene Healy and Timothy Lynch, have produced an analysis of the record of George W. Bush and his administration on the constitutional power of the presidency. And the Cato Institute really went after Bill Clinton, by the way, and you know called him called his administration the beginnings of the imperial presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd argue that
paving the way for the Republicans to take over. I mean,
I'd argue that you go all the way back for Woodrow Wilson for the imperial presidency, but that's another issue. Even Lincoln, you could make a case that he overstepped the bounds. But it's an interesting article. I won't go into it much, but. We'll put a link to the PDF file, the document that you can download. It's about 19 pages, worth reading. And they basically come to the conclusion that President Bush's view of the Constitution is, in short, sharply at odds with the text, history, and structure of our Constitution, which authorizes a government of limited powers.
Mm.
So good reference and a good background on what the presidency is supposed to look like according to the United States Constitution.
Well, you know, on Fridays, we normally have red hot blather all day. We got an email saying, more red hot blather. We normally do that on Fridays, but not today. We have part two of our interview with Beth Vey, so we don't want to hold that up any longer. We're going to go right to that right now.
We're so pleased to have Beth Vey back again today as we continue our discussion of her e-books, The Anunnaki and the Abyss and Nibiru and Wormwood.
You know, I have particularly selfish reasons for liking having Beth, being glad that we have Beth back. And it's not just because you do this amazing research, Beth, which you do. It's because it shows our listeners that there are women doing this research. It's not just all guys. Almost every guest we have is a male, and I love the research that everybody's doing, but praise God we've got another lady out there.
Thank you.
Well, she wanted to make that point, and I agree wholeheartedly, because it's not a field that should be limited just to male or men types. But yeah, this really is fascinating stuff, and we had stopped yesterday at a point that was really getting good as we were working through Revelation 8 and the mountain thrown into the sea and turning a third of it to blood. And then as we get to Revelation 8:11, the star falling to earth named Wormwood. Now, does this indicate a literal heavenly being, a star coming down to earth, or are we talking about something else here?
Because the book of Revelation
almost always indicates the falling stars as being fallen angels. I believe that it's a fallen angel that's coming down. The description of it, I believe, is a further description of the previous passage where it talks about a mountain on fire that comes down and turns the water the color of blood.
Mm-hmm.
The color of blood, and that would be also the color of blood and undigestible because wormwood poisons the water. So wormwood and the mountain that comes down are the same thing. And they're... So it's a pyramidal shape, mountain.
Mm-hmm, mountain would be a pyramid. And yeah, and you mentioned in our last show that the Eye of Ra...
Right, was a weapon.
Sour, that, exactly, was a weapon that would turn the waters to blood.
With the color, yes. So that would also make a whole lot of sense out of the passage where it talks about the water or the blood being up to the horse's reins. Because... the, you know, that it's hard to imagine that much blood. You know what I mean? I mean, we would have to be stacked on top of each other in huge piles in order to create that much blood on the earth, you know. But if it was water that was the color of blood, which is identified there in Revelation 8 as happening when the mountain on fire crashes into the water.
Now, I know a lot of researchers see that mountain on fire and they think comet, asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
And we just finished an interview with Rick Wiles, who keeps talking with people, and he himself has had a vision of a fireball coming to the earth.
The interesting thing about this is that when John saw the vision originally, when he saw it, he defined it as a mountain. The interesting thing about that is in the Bible, when it talks about meteors or anything like that coming down, it calls them rocks and stones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, and in this case, he's talking about it being a shape like a mountain, which conjures in your mind a thing with a peak at the top, a triangular shape.
It does. It
mm-hmm.
does.
And then it's further defined as causing the water to be color of blood. So this kind of ties back into the whole legend of Ra and Hathor thing. It also ties into Enki's Abzu thing. And so it all seems to be like a huge historical puzzle that has all these pieces scattered all throughout history that all further define what's going to be happening at that passage in time. And the Sitchinites, the people who follow the work and believe in the work of Zechariah Sitchin, say that this is a reference to the passage of Nibiru, which they believe is an additional planet.
Planet X, yeah.
Right, Planet X. Now, my whole feeling on that is that, yes, there may be a tenth planet. Why not? I mean, who cares how many planets there are out there? I mean, there's a lot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It, whether or not it swings around and wreaks havoc on our planet every so often is a different story. This passage is not referring to a planet. It's referring to a falling star, which is a metaphor for a fallen angel.
And it clearly talks about something that impacts the earth or connects to the earth and yet only kills about a third a third of the creatures in the sea and a third of the ships destroyed. A third of the rivers and springs of water.
And isn't it interesting that it uses the word a third because that's exactly how many angels fell? A
mm-hmm.
third.
Yes.
That's a good point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good observation. So, and you're right. Sitchin and his followers have interpreted this as a planet X, which is something that generates a lot of anxiety among people out there who think that NASA is keeping something from us, which they might be. We don't know. But I think when you look at the prophecy in the book of Revelation, it's pretty clear we're not hitting something that is big enough, planet-sized enough to be called a planet. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't even think it's the size of a moon or even a small moon. I don't even think it's the size of it's the size of a mountain. That's
mm-hmm.
what size it is.
Mm-hmm.
If it were really crashing into the earth, it would do more. If it was an actual mountain, it would do more damage than a third because it would be many, 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 many times bigger than any of the reported asteroids that have struck the Earth. And mm-hmm. things like, for example, the references, they said, how big would that chunk of rock have to be in order to cause an ice age?
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be, you know, so many feet by so many feet, you know, and because of the speed it's traveling at when it enters the atmosphere. So if it were an actual piece of rock that was, you know, a mountain-sized piece mm-hmm. of rock, it would not crash into the ocean and only kill a third of the people. It would punch a hole in the planet.
It truly would. Well, you know, if you go back to the movie Armageddon, which is another propaganda piece, you know, the line is, it's as big as Texas, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, another interesting image from another, I don't know if you want to call it predictive programming film, Steven Spielberg's remake of The War of the Worlds, where you had the pilots for the craft coming down from heaven like
lightning. That was. Have you seen that movie, Beth?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah,
oh,
and
definitely.
And then I don't want to give away too much for people who haven't seen it, but the way they process people literally covers the land with red.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. So where do the Sitchinites get the idea that this 10th planet, this planet X, is called Nibiru?
Well, there's a lot of conflicting information as regards to that, because someone else had mentioned that they believe there was evidence to prove that at one time the ancient people called Jupiter Nibiru. I'm really not sure on that. I haven't done enough research on that particular subject, but I do know that the ancient Sumerians referred to Nibiru as, it was the Sumerian word for Nippur, which was the city of Enlil. Enlil was another Anunnaki, who it said in the ancient text was the brother of Enki.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly he was even in an even higher position in the Anunnaki hierarchy than Enki, and this was why a lot of Sitchin's theories surrounded the similarities between the activities of Enlil and the activities of Jehovah. But when you study Enlil specifically, if you just go and just study Enlil specifically and compare him and his activities to Jehovah, you find out that they are definitely not the same being. But some of his activities were attributed to him. That's why, again, it's really a good thing that the Hebrew lineage saved the oral histories, because the mainstream histories that were so influenced and modified, so heavily modified by, I mean, perfect example of that is what Marduk did. Marduk and the Enuma Elish story that was written after the antediluvian flood, the big flood. Yes, the flood in Mesopotamia. After that event was when Marduk came along. He was one of the, he was a Babylonian founder, a god, like he was Nimrod, biblical Nimrod. And he attributed to himself everything that any of the other gods did prior to that, except for Enki, who he worshipped, I guess.
He called his father, too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So it was like he divorced Jehovah and was adopted by Enki, which is essentially what it says in the biblical text that he did. You know, he became a mighty one before the Lord, which is usually a reference to Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
Was
he trying to bring the old gods back?
I know. He was trying to become all of them.
Oh.
He said, I am God. I am God. Well, first he tried to get the people to get rid of the idea of God altogether. When he got enough of them convinced that these ancient gods didn't exist, because they were all the angels, they'd all been stuck in the bottomless pit by God and locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were not influenced by them at all until Nimrod, Marduk. Mm-hmm. And he brought it back in, but he brought it back in as worship of him. Now, this is where Sitchin goes off track and it says that the hymn that it they should be worshiping as Jehovah, that he was Jehovah, that this is how the Hebrews got confused. They mistook the monotheism of Marduk as being Jehovah. It's not true. Marduk was Nimrod. He was emulating the ancient gods. Mm-hmm. He was taking credit for all their activities. If you read in the Enumeration, you'll see he takes credit for everything, including saving mankind. And oh my goodness!
Well, why was he trying to open up the gate? I mean, if you're saying that he built the Tower of Babel.
Oh yes, I agree with you on that. He was probably.
That's what I mean. Enki, when I asked if he was trying to bring him back.
Yes, I think Enki was trying to. Influence him in that regard, you know, get this thing let's get this ball rolling again, because it says that there were giants in the earth in those days and also afterwards, and it was referring to after the flood. In other words, that they came back.
Right.
And, of course, there's lots of biblical evidence for that as well. And I don't think it always means giant when it says giant. I think sometimes it just means the fallen ones. And the fallen ones in reference to the fallen humans, that, and we are all fallen from God's grace, but these people were especially fallen because they were hybrid, and they had no, was Dake. Dake was a biblical scholar who said that the word translated to the unresurrectable. Their bodies were not resurrectable.
You know, that is really interesting.
Yes.
In other words, they could not receive salvation.
Mm-mm.
And that ties in with the Book of Enoch, which said that the Nephilim were condemned to wander the earth as spirits, disembodied spirits, plaguing mankind until the day of their final judgment, the day of the final judgment.
Which would make them kind of like the demons.
Demons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, which is why they said to Jesus in the cemetery, don't send us to the abyss. It's not our time.
It's
That's
our
right.
Time, yeah.
Mark chapter 5. Yeah, that is, wow. Again, this just opens up a whole new understanding of what was going on through all of biblical history.
Yeah,
the Enuma Elish is an interesting document. I'm going to have to read that, too. Peter Levenda was telling us that actually he's posted to his blog, and in response to a question by Peter Goodgame, the
two.
Author of Red Moon Rising, that Levenda translated the Necronomicon, which was a document based on the Enuma Elish.
I wasn't aware that it was based on that.
Yeah, the Enuma Elish is apparently the original document upon which Levenda based his translation of the Necronomicon. Now, how much of the translation was his own creative origination, I don't know. And Mr.
Interesting.
That
and
is.
There's lots of passages in that time frame where it talks about the... using the gates, there were seven of them between Earth and the throne room of the head Anunnaki or Anu, and there were seven gates between the Earth and the what was it called? The I can't think of the name of it. Erish Kigal or some crazy thing like that.
Yes, yes.
Which I haven't researched the actual meaning of the word. I should probably do that.
But that's really interesting because the Necronomicon is a text that is used by people who want to get into magical workings to open gates between this dimension and the spirit realm and invite beings across.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Schneblin, in particular, has talked about it being an actual... guidebook, basically, for people who want to practice this kind of magic.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is that, you know how you
were making references to before, the idea that the aliens may not actually be literal ETs, that they may actually be disfallen angelic beings.
Sure.
Pretending to be ETs.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's correct or not is kind of an interesting subject in and of itself, but this may be an example of what they're doing. They're spiritualizing it, that it's actually and the fallen angels are accommodating them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know. Oh, so you want to have a talk, eh? No problemo.
Exactly, exactly. And we just talked with Tom Horn, whose interview is aired just prior to yours, about what was going on in the days of Noah that Jesus referred to when he prophesied about the time of his return, as uh-huh. it was in the days of Noah. So it'll be, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, Tom laid out a number of parallels, things that were going on in the days before the flood, which, of course,
absolutely.
Was exactly during this time frame of the Sumerian texts that you're talking about and that mm-hmm. you link to at your website.
Mm-hmm.
That's that same period of time when these Anunnaki were coming down and intermingling with humans,
mm-hmm.
Dealing with humans on a one-to-one personal basis, mm-hmm. and then mingling with the human bloodlines and so forth.
And, well, right. and getting back to the Necronomicon and things like that, at about that same time as Lovecraft, there was a person who was Crowley.
Crowley,
sorry.
Aleister Crowley.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the chick that wrote the book.
Who wrote the book?
Yes.
Harry Potter stuff.
I know. That is an evil series of books.
Yeah?
It really is. That there's true magic in those books.
Uh-oh.
And kids are learning real magical spells, and that's what bothers me about this. We did let Nicole read the books, but Derek read them with her.
Mm.
And we used this as an opportunity for teaching her, you know,
this
is counterfeit. We've taught her the real stuff. Now, tell us why this is counterfeit. Tell us why this is evil.
Mm-hmm.
And she learned a lot from that. But, no, Aleister Crowley, who was doing his
Amalantra working,
and then in 1946,
Jack Parsons
and good old L. Ron Hubbard did their Babylon working.
Right.
And right after that, we had the Roswell crash.
Right. Now, I believe that it all ties in, but I don't believe that necessarily it all ties in for the exact same reasons. There's a lot of different things happening at once. And I think that's because the idea is to create as much confusion as possible so that when the final solution is provided for people to see, they'll think, oh, yeah, that's it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, in other words, look at how much attack has taken place on the ancient text. It started back with the German high critics, the mm-hmm. higher criticism.
Mm-hmm.
They immediately started attacking all the ancient stories so that they were no longer valid for using historically or in any other fashion.
Mm-hmm. And now we have the same criticism of the Bible and even Jesus. Hey, he didn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, and it caused this humongous dichotomy in the when archaeologists go to their sites and start digging, they keep coming up with evidence that proves the ancient texts are correct,
mm-hmm.
and they have to ignore it,
mm-hmm.
because that would mean they would have to agree with the ancient texts being correct, and mm-hmm. they can't do that.
Right, but then now you come up in the last 20 years or so, you get guys like Eric von Daniken and Zechariah Sitchin, who come along and say, you know what, there is history in these ancient texts. It's
absolutely.
Just that we couldn't take it at face value.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
These ancient astronauts, extraterrestrials from planet Nibiru, which, Beth, you identify as just the city, the holy city of the Sumerian god Enlil.
Which was in
Nippur,
Sumer, not on another planet.
Right, just a little
exactly.
little farther up the river there from Eridu, Enki's holy city.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got these ancient astronauts who came down, and in a parallel to the story remembered in Genesis chapter 6 and in the book of Enoch, mingled with humans, taught us all of the technology that we needed
mm-hmm.
to survive,
mm-hmm.
how to farm, how to fight, how to put on makeup and cast spells and various other things. And that is what was going on. And if you believe von Daniken, they may be coming back again someday. In fact, interestingly enough, a new series is going to debut in 06 on the Sci-Fi Channel, inspired by the Chariot of the Gods work of Eric von Daniken.
Right.
More predictive programming.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as a matter of fact, I play a video game on the Internet called WoW, World of Warcraft. And while I've been playing it, I've been thinking, you know, this thing is loaded with symbols from the ancient I mean, it's all over the place in this thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is amazing.
A lot of video games are like that.
Oh, my goodness, it's massive. This massive programming, and it's not just on a small scale. It's on a huge scale.
Yeah, I looked at that game. That's pretty entertaining. In fact, that was about the only computer game that my dad actually started to play before before his eyes got to where he couldn't watch the computer screen anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, and he thought it was pretty cool. But you're right. There are a lot of games that are like that, not just World of Warcraft. But
The symbols are very heavy, and yeah. I think that they're trying to guide people in a certain direction. Like, for example, one of the wars you have to fight, one of the quests you sent on, requires that you kill things that are old and withered or crazy. Like, crazy old withered things need to be killed. You understand that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
We need to kill the crazy people, and we need to kill the old people, and we need to kill the withered people because they're not useful. You know, and I mean, it's like Nazi theology right smack in the middle of a fantasy video
yes.
game.
The eugenics movement never died. It just put on a different coat of paint and has been recycled. The whole Nazi eugenics agenda has been recycled.
A lot of pagans are going to be really surprised to find out that that's the direction that they're being led in.
You know, I'm glad you brought
Nazi paganism. Theology. Huh?
Paganism has it's had such a resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Hawaiians are going back to Pele worship.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Brits are going back to the Celtic, the Druid ways, they say.
The Greek gods were just...
The Greek gods have been... there's been a law against them.
In Greece for years and years, yeah.
And they've just repealed it.
Well, you know, the Greek gods were probably the same ones talking about the other texts, you know?
I know it.
Exactly.
Know
they
it.
Were just identified by different names. They were the same ones that they were worshiping in Sumer and Babylon, just recycled through, you know, the generations and given different names to appeal to a different culture.
And isn't it interesting that that was exactly what they had to do? They had to first discount any of the ancient texts so that none of them would be available as actual proof against these beings that they were going to come back here and do what the Bible says they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing. I mean, even what the other ancient texts refer to as annihilation of all these people for stupid things. I mean, really dumb stuff. This god and this god get mad at each other, so they have a war, and they nuke each other into oblivion, and, a few hundred million people died along with
The Great Flood, according to Sumerian literature, the reason that the Great Flood swept over the land was because people were making too much noise, and we were keeping Enlil awake all night.
Right, which, of course, is not even see what I mean? They took his story, they took the biblical stories, which were actually oral histories at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They took the stories of what actually happened. They knew what happened, but they tried to absorb it into their own. I'm not saying that the Bible itself as a book predated the Sumerian stories, not even remotely. But what happened was the ancient Hebrews, as it proves in Deuteronomy, kept an oral tradition about what happened in the past.
Well,
ask your fathers, and they will tell you.
Exactly. And I think that after God came down and scrambled the languages at Babel, and we know from the Bible that the Table of Nations, the 70 nations, they were given over to fallen angels, the princes of these nations. Well, you know that these princes are going to demand worship.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going. It's the old whoever gets to write the history gets to tell it his way.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And these gods told the real history with a twist.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And so, unfortunately, when Christianity finally got to become mainstream, it got to become mainstream under the auspices of this monster called the Roman Catholic Empire. And Holy Roman Empire, and it just so dirtied the name of Christianity that it'll never actually have the kind of public standing that these ancient stories have, because the fallen angels have been very careful to cover their tracks.
Well, you know, it's funny you should bring that up because in the time of Babel, the Tower of Babel, we had Semiramis worship, and which is just goddess worship. And we're seeing the same sort of thing with all these Marian apparitions. Mary,
with all the
simply
what?
Apparitions, these visions of Mary.
Oh, yes.
Mary's just, that is not Mary.
No.
Jesus' mother is not showing up here on earth as a co-redemptrix. That's mm-hmm. just not happening because she had to be saved just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and her body will resurrect just like everyone
exactly.
else.
Exactly. She's no different than you or I. She's to be respected and honored because she did carry Christ. But that's it. Mm-hmm. And this being that is appearing all over the world at various places and times, this is not Mary. This is evil.
It's the ancient Babylonian system, yeah. Mm-hmm. It harkens back to that, like you said, Semiramis, who I believe was Isis. Mm-hmm. And just that was her Babylonian name.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same story over and over, recycled, as you say, absorbed in.
Yeah.
Also, in regards to that image that I sent you, I want to get that image.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We just got to going on some other things. You sent us an image that we'll post in the show notes here. It's like mm-hmm. a cross-section of a pyramid, and then another's got a geometric calculations to stuff, brain-hurting mathematics. how does this relate to your research?
Okay. According to Patrick Herod, and I tend to agree with him, New City Jerusalem will be shaped like a pyramid.
A pyramid, mm-hmm. that's right, sorry.
And that the pyramids on Earth are basically attempts by the fallen angels to duplicate God's handiwork.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read the description of New City Jerusalem, I believe it's in Revelation chapter 21, it describes it as being a gigantic crystal shape. The foundations and everything are all made from gemstones. It's all, and it's the streets are clear, like glass.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically like a giant crystal pyramid, mm-hmm. which I refer to as a prism.
Mm-hmm.
So those two pictures that you see there mm-hmm. are a diagram of the passages inside the Great Pyramid
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and a prism. The
okay.
second one is a prism. The interesting thing about the prism is that it light passes through a prism and is separated into its colors
mm-hmm.
At 26.5 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is also several measurements inside the Great Pyramid equal 26.3, 26.55, 26. They're all, so it, to me, if you look at it, it almost looks like what you're seeing is the Great Pyramid was designed in such a way as to replicate a gigantic prism through which light would pass and be separated into something. I don't know.
That's a really interesting theory.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, it looks the same. I mean, it has a lot of similarities. And another thing that I was thinking was because it says New City Jerusalem is made out of this clear glass material, mm-hmm. Crystalline in appearance, mm-hmm. and that God's glow is in it. His glory is in it, and mm-hmm. his glory is so bright that there's no need for the sun. If you read the passage,
yeah.
what it
yes,
says.
Exactly.
So to me, this sounds like his it's like light inside this prism that I don't understand all of it. Okay, I'm not mathematically inclined.
We need to get David Flynn on this.
Yes, please do.
We've got an interview scheduled with Dave Flynn before the end of the prophecy series. We will definitely get him working on this. And also, we've got a couple of listeners that one of which is he's going for an advanced degree in mathematics.
Yeah.
Yes, a gentleman we call a math magician because he's a wizard when it comes to working with this advanced mathematical stuff. So we'll definitely pass it on to him and get him working on it too.
I also did some investigation on what properties limestone or granite might have that would have anything to do with it. Unfortunately, what I ended up with was descriptions of limestone not being electromagnetically or any other fashion capable of passing energy. It would act more like an insulator.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I found interesting about that was if the Eye of Ra, let's say, for example, the Eye of Ra was used laser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're imagining the pyramid as some kind of an energy device that would power this thing. I don't know how else to explain what I'm thinking. But see, you know how the great seal on the back of the dollar has the pyramid with the eye over it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This kind of harkens back to the idea that the Eye of Ra was this weapon that was somehow connected to the pyramid and to the Enki ziggurat, because it said there were many eyes on the planet. But Ra's was the most powerful eye on the planet. It doesn't say there were many eyes out there in the solar system. It said they were right here on this planet, but Ra's was the most powerful of the eyes on the planet.
We definitely need to have you back to talk about this again. We've just about run out of time. And there's so much more to cover here. I could try to summarize this correctly. Your two e-books, The Anunnaki and the Abyss and Nibiru and Wormwood. Basically, your view of the future is that what we're going to see is the mountain come to Earth, which also is identified as a fallen angel named Wormwood, coming to Earth, causing great destruction, and then opening up the literal abyss, the gateway to the abyss, which is located at Eridu in southern Iraq, and that will bring forth millions upon millions of the fallen that will then go out, as it's described in Revelation chapter 9, and just create massive amounts
hell
of
on earth.
Destruction. Yes, hell on earth, literal hell on earth.
But I also would like to interject here that when the pit opens, I think there's a possibility that other gates have been found, dug up and used. But when that one in particular is used, I mm-hmm. believe that's what starts the chain of events.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's my theory on it.
Well, Beth, we will definitely get you back again. It's been too long since we've had you, because this is such a fascinating topic, and it makes me want to dig right back into the. We've got research to do tonight. Yes.
Online. So your website again is
art, like an artwork, mm-hmm. artapprentice.net/Sumer, or just artapprentice.net.
And she's got links to all of the ancient texts from almost every culture around the world. It is an amazing resource for these ancient texts, and we're so blessed that we've been able to meet and exchange ideas and thoughts. We appreciate your contributions on the forum, and Beth, God bless you and keep you strong and inspired in your research.
Thank you.
Thank you for being our guest on PID Radio.
Thanks, Beth. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Beth's website is artapprentice.net. It's called Secrets of Sumer. And she also has another website called thestargate.com.
Boy, you know, that says a lot right there.
Yep.
Speaking of stargates,
mm-hmm.
If you heard tonight's Steve Quayle broadcast, Derek was actually out of the house, so he did not hear this. I told him about it when he came home. Hawk was filling in for Steve, which I think he may be doing from now on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
Steve apparently in yesterday's broadcast mentioned something about needing prayer for some people behind the scenes, some military people behind the scenes who were going to be possibly engaged in something very dangerous. Hawk reported today that indeed a clash did take place, that if I understood him correctly, he related to Stargate technology. And he said, again, if I remember this number correctly, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but I believe he said 100 people died to keep you and me safe.
Yeah, these are men that Steve refers to as mighty men of valor, which is a reference, of course, to the men who served as the bodyguards of King David, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to go back and listen to the archive show. And if you're a subscriber to Steve Quayle's archives, which is a nominal fee. It's very, very affordable.
$6.95 a month.
Yeah.
You can listen to them over and over again. And, you know, we don't mind paying it. You know, we highly recommend it. That's not very much.
A lot of good information.
That's lunch.
Yeah. It's a lot of good information in the show tonight, and the reference to literal Stargate technology and 100 men dying to keep one closed is really intriguing and a little bit nerve-wracking.
It is. It really is. And I know that many of our listeners out there are, you know, you're just now starting to really tune in and understand a little bit of what's taking place in the world. And frankly, many of these things, we're not going to understand this side of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
One day we will, because right now we, even those who are intimately involved in this sort of action, we all see through a glass darkly.
Right. Well, we will check on that. And meanwhile, we look forward to Monday as we begin a series with Dave Duncan. He has a website called the New World Order Scam, and he's going to expound on that and also the year 2012 scam. In a nutshell, are Christians being deceived by holding too closely to one limited, narrow version of end times prophecy?
You know, that's a theme that I think you can use to explain many of the speakers we've had on over the last few weeks, and probably more that you're going to hear over the next couple of weeks. Don't get this little pet that maybe is trivializing it, but don't stick to one dogmatic interpretation of scripture, because that's what you were taught when you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain tenets that you cannot deviate from.
Right.
One of them is that Jesus Christ is God incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
He died on the cross. He rose again 3 days later.
Mm-hmm.
After 40 days of teaching, he rose to be with his Father. He is coming back, and mm-hmm. he's going to rule again. That is not debatable.
Not as far as we're concerned.
It's not negotiable as far as we're concerned. The fact that he was born of a virgin, that's not negotiable as far as we're concerned.
Right.
We don't believe Mary was born of a virgin. No. That's what Immaculate Conception really means, folks.
Yeah.
They believe Mary was born of a virgin.
Took me by surprise when I found that out after I became a Catholic.
But anyway, there are some things that we just won't budge on. But there are a few other things, mm-hmm. many of them prophetic, that are up for interpretation.
Right.
And our guests are taking fresh looks at this. Tomorrow, we're going to be interviewing on the phone David Flynn.
Yes.
And then on Sunday, we're going to be talking with Peter Goodgame on
yes.
Sunday.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And those interviews will be coming up in the days and
the
weeks
following
ahead.
Weeks, yeah.
So, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of meat to chew on here. And we encourage you to take advantage of the archives at PIDradio.com. We're keeping them free as long as we can, and God has provided, so, you know, looks like for the foreseeable future, we'll be able to keep doing that. So download the shows. If you want to burn them to discs, burn them to discs.
Oh,
share them with friends. We don't care.
Please, please do. We don't do these to make money. We would like to be able to pay the bills. So for those of you who have helped out, thank you very much. And we're trying very hard to keep them free for as long as we can, and one of the ways we do that is to go through an organization called the Choral Distribution Network. We want to thank those people, because they are providing free servers
mm-hmm.
that serve up our stuff daily, and it keeps our bandwidth costs down. It
right.
keeps them affordable. Otherwise, we just really would not be on the air now.
Yeah, it...
But it does slow things down.
It does slow things down. So if you notice when you're trying to get a new show that's up on the web at a certain time of day and iTunes is having trouble, it's timing out and you can't get it, that is probably the reason. That's probably the reason. Go ahead and send me an email, and I'll check into it as fast as I can.
Mm-hmm. We try to fix that as quickly as we find out about it. But the fact is that I think that there are, you know, peak times during the day that a lot of people are trying to hit the podcasts
servers
at the same time. So we apologize for any problems you're running into. You know what? One of these days, God may just open up the heavens and make money not a problem for us. And that day, we will no longer use the Choral Distribution Network.
Yep. But until then, it really does help. It cut our bandwidth use by about two-thirds.
Oh, it was huge.
So it's
huge.
That's been a real help. But again, the downside is that it does make the downloads slower, and we appreciate your patience when you're doing that. So that's the reason. Like I said, though, go ahead and send me a note, because every once in a while it turns out that the mistake is me typing in.
And it's
a period
so easy.
In the wrong place,
yeah,
so.
Exactly. You put a comma here, whatever. It's easy to do. You do yeoman's work when it comes to putting these together,
crap.
And I just thank you so much. I don't thank you enough, and God bless you for doing it, honey.
Oh, you make me feel like a king, so.
You are. Not imperial, though. We don't have an empire around here.
No, that's true. Just the bunker. And, until Monday, well, we're open here to take your emails and comments at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And we'd love to have you join everybody. The free-for-all at the forum at peeringintodarkness.com/forum. And by the way, we did get someone asked today about the map of the incidents. We have not put that together yet. It's been kind of a busy week here in the bunker. We're going to try to get it done this weekend. So please be patient with us. As soon as it's done, we'll let you know.
Yeah. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.